whole new faculty had to be hired, and a whole new structure was developed based on the American system, which meant that you could have you could have more than one professor in the department. You had tenured professors of various kinds, a different hierarchy. They had a lot of trouble getting rid of some of the old professors, but they squeezed them out. They voted them out. It became a democratic institution, and essentially they voted. They couldn't take away the professorial title, but essentially they voted them out of their activities, out of all their activities.
What was your role?
Well, at that point, the physics department, which was set up as the Institute of Physics, had to choose an area to get into. And a friend of mine, someone I had known here in Pittsburgh, who was now back in Brazil, and under this new system had decided to go back to Brazil, he asked me to come to Brazil to help set up an activity that they felt was would be of use to the country. So they invited me to do that. And when I got to Brazil, it was absolutely nothing. Well, the first thing I did was I was given a certain budget while I was still in the United States. I was told that I would have a lab of a certain size, and I had to buy equipment.
This was all after you left Westinghouse?
No. I was still working for Westinghouse. This was in 1972. Okay. In 1972, I had been invited to become to set up a laboratory and to teach at the university in Rio de Janeiro.
So you took some time off from Westinghouse.
Well, initially I had to set up the laboratory. And they had nothing, they had no equipment. So they gave me a budget, and I decided what the equipment was going to be, what the laboratory was going to look like. I laid out the laboratory. I knew how big it was going to be because they had already assigned a room for me, a lab. So I knew how much space I had. But I had to buy equipment. So I ordered all the equipment, and when the equipment arrived in Brazil, and it took 6 months perhaps before all the equipment came, I went down. And I went down there for, I think, 3 months, 3 or 4 months to set up the lab. And I remember coming into the lab, and it was absolutely empty except for an old cabinet, a glass cabinet, like the kind of that they have surgical instruments in. I don't know if you can see there are doors, glass doors, and glass shelves, and all the instruments would be laid out. Well, that was the only piece of furniture in there. And the only other equipment were crates of equipment that I had ordered that hadn't been unpacked yet. It was sitting against the wall. And I was given a graduate student to help me. Taylor.
One.
One
graduate student. You didn't speak any Portuguese.
I didn't speak any Portuguese. So somehow we managed to communicate, and I started opening boxes, and then I got people to help me build lab benches, and they did that for me. And by the time I left at the end of the 3 months, all the equipment was set up and working. And then I was going to come back for another visit, this time to actually start the curriculum, to develop a curriculum based on this laboratory, on this work. And at that point, Dorothy and Peter came with me, and we were there for 5 months. And starting with nothing, by the time we were finished, we had already, at the end of the 5 months, or before the 5 months ended, we had a paper to deliver at a scientific society in Brazil, which was really nice, because here we were in Rio de Janeiro, and the physical society meeting was in Salvador, which is 1,000 miles north. That gave us a chance to see a fair amount of Brazil that we hadn't seen, so that was very nice. So we all traveled up there. It was a nice meeting, and the paper was given.
And what was your status at Westinghouse?
To do this, I had asked for a leave of absence at Westinghouse without pay. And I was given it grudgingly because the person who, a man named Shupp, who was the vice president in charge of research, had a very generous program about 4 or 5 years earlier. He had implemented a program whereby people at Westinghouse could go to a university and spend 6 months or a year, and Westinghouse would make up any deficit in salary that they would get from the university so they could continue their salary. his vision was that this would help people grow, help people develop new, to learn, get new knowledge, and to learn useful things. The people who took advantage of this, however, had a different agenda. Their agenda was to see whether they really liked university life. The result was that none of them came back. They all liked university life. They were already predisposed to it. This gave them an opportunity to see if it was really right. While they were at the university, they negotiated a contract. They got hired by the university. In those days, universities were hiring lots and lots of people. It was during the growth of science. It was the Sputnik, you know, effect, when all universities were developing in technology and they needed people. And so Shupp, Bill Shupp, was burned, and he felt very resentful that people took advantage of his generosity. So when I applied, it was almost certain that he would say no, because again, he figured I wouldn't come back. So the first thing I knew was he wasn't going to pay me, so I didn't ask for any money. But my boss at the time, who was really sympathetic to the idea of my going, said, why don't you get in touch with the vice president in charge of the Southern Hemisphere? Now, the Southern Hemisphere consisted of all of South America and Africa, but he was actually based in Rio de Janeiro. So I wrote to the vice president in charge of Southern Hemisphere, and I asked him whether he thought it was a good idea that I spend 6 months teaching at the university, and he thought it was a splendid idea. He said it would be good for Westinghouse, it would help their image in South America. So when I applied to Shupp for a leave of absence, I attached his letter to my request. Well, of course, Shupp couldn't say no. But he was not very happy, so he wrote over my letter. He said, okay, he said, but I hope this isn't going to cost Westinghouse any money. So that was how he was expressed his dissatisfaction, because he knew he had been sandbagged. When I came back, he was so surprised.
What year did you come back?
Did
you go? Well,
that was the 5 months. I went in 73 and 74, and I went in 75, and I went in 80-something. Made several trips. But when I came back, Shupp was so surprised that we became buddies. every time he saw me, he would make a point of coming over and saying, okay, Nate, how are we doing today? You know. From that point on, I mean, we were the best of friends, literally, because I was probably the first one who had fulfilled his fantasy, his wish. So, but the experience of building a laboratory and getting a graduate student, and by the way, my graduate student eventually got his PhD, the first one in that whole area. And now he's a faculty member and he's got graduate students all doing the work that I had started. All that work is still going on down there, and I can remember that experience. It was just a wonderful experience, and absolutely it was a fulfillment of a dream that I didn't even really dream. I mean, it was just a fulfilling experience of its own. And the sense of accomplishment and seeing things going and people appreciating what I was doing, and it was just a great experience. I can say that honestly, it was one of the most fulfilling experiences of my life. And you know, I get the same sense often from doing things for these organizations that I'm associated with. For example, with the Steinway Society, it's nice because I know that a large part of what's going on now is due to me, and that if the society succeeds and survives, which I can't be absolutely certain, you can't with any society really, because it's a question of membership too, it'll have a lot to do with what I put into it. And those are really, you know, that's a sense of reward that one doesn't get very often. I suppose a writer can get that when they see a book published and they get good reviews. They feel that. Or an actor feels that after a play, they get a good review. But I don't get a review. I mean, I can sense it myself. And I think it's just, you know, it's a great way to live. And it's much better, you know, you can't be happy all the time, I think, but you can be contented, and this is a sense of fulfillment. It's not really a sense of happiness, it's really something different than a sense of fulfillment.
I think I see
happiness as a transitory thing. Nobody can be happy all the time.
I think happiness is that sense of fulfillment. That's what makes...
Well, I call it contentment.
Yeah. Well, it depends on what you think.
Anyway... Yeah. Now, ask me some questions.
When did you leave Westinghouse, and what, and why did you, I mean, where did you go when you left Westinghouse, and when?
I left Westinghouse about 93, 94. I can't remember. It was either 93 or 94.
So did you leave to retire?
I was already over, I was 70 at the time, so it must have been like 94, yeah, and I was 70 years old. They had been laying off people left and right over a period of many years, and I was always in a category where I could easily have been laid off, because I was, from the time I reached 65, I was eligible for a pension. And I, therefore, they had the option of getting rid of me. I saw younger people getting laid off. And there were layoffs every year, sometimes twice a year. They would be laying off people in batches of 40 or 50 typically. And the lab was shrinking from a peak of 2,000. When I left, there were perhaps 800. And these layoffs would occur, as I said, yearly or sometimes twice a year. And I saw young people being laid off looking, and they were in serious trouble. They had to find new jobs, they had families. When I got to be 70 or thereabout, maybe roughly 70, a little over 70 actually, I was extremely vulnerable at that point, so I thought, but they kept me on because the work I was doing was important. But in 1994, it was about that time, the president of Westinghouse, Paul Lego, wanted to lay off a large number of people across the board, and he mandated a layoff across the board, every department, every division, including laboratories, would be subject to the same percentage layoff. And that meant quite a lot of people. And he made it easy to do that by making offers to people. And I got an offer I just couldn't refuse. They made me an offer. I was able to live for 3 years on the severance pay that they gave. And here I was already 70 years old or over. Or perhaps a little over. But it was better than that. I was hired back as a consultant full-time initially, and then part-time, and gradually at a diminished rate. So over a period of 3 years, I went as a consultant from a full-time status to a part-time status, to a no-time status when the money ran out. I can't think of a better way to retire. First of all, the gradual retirement is really the best way to go. The sudden retirement that people are faced with, where one day they're working and the next day they're not working, that's a real traumatic, It can be. Maybe not in Harry's case, but he may have been looking forward to it years before. But for many people, it is traumatic, which is why there are so many heart attacks among people after they retire. It's quite common. Certainly used to be.
But you had so many extracurricular activities.
Sure, but the best part was that I was able to work, and I could phase myself out gradually, and really, I cannot tell you how beneficial that is as a way to retire, because it gives you a chance to fill your time with new activities at the same time that you're doing the old activities. There's nothing sudden about it. It's just a great way to retire. In addition to the nice severance pay they gave me, which which Mr. Lego made possible by virtue of the fact that he was trying to buy people into retirement. He was paying them to retire, in effect. And I was a beneficiary of that. So I made out very well. We lived on that retirement pay for about 3 years. On that that bonus, you might say. It was kind of, it was a golden parachute. It was a silver parachute with a lot of holes in it, but still, it flooded.
What a good way to restructure your life.
Oh, absolutely.
Over a period
absolutely.
Of years.
Yeah.
It really, I'm not sure you fully realize the importance of the information you gave us.
But it's absolutely the way to go. I used to tell people that if they have to retire abruptly, if they're faced with that situation, that what they really ought to do is plan for it by taking a round-the-world trip, going off on vacation for 6 months, so that they come back with a whole new outlook. Because you've got to do that. I mean, it's very difficult to realize what a person who's worked every day of his life or her life faces when one day they are shut out of their office. I can remember there's one person at the lab who got the vice president so angry that the vice president fired him on the spot and said to him, "You come back tomorrow to get your things, and then I don't want to see you in this laboratory again forever." And that's what happened. And this is shock. This is a terrible shock. We had a retirement party for him a few months later, or thereabouts, and I was one of the speakers. I'd known him very well. And what I did was I prepared a cup of coffee that looked like this. But I got some brown jello, and I poured it halfway in, and put a spoon in, and I let it solidify. And I said, "Dan left so hurriedly that he even left behind a cup of half-finished coffee." And I held up the cup, and I poured it upside down, and everybody could see that there was this coffee-colored liquid in there, solidified with a spoon still in it. I said, "And here's the cup." That's
so actually, you haven't been retired very long.
No. About 4 or 5 years.
And what have you done since then?
Well, I just told you.
Yeah, all these activities.
Yeah, and you know, we travel. We travel more than to Spain. We were actually planning a trip to Brazil for a few weeks this spring, but it turned out that the person, one of the people we wanted to see, was not going to be there, so we postponed the trip till next year. But we normally take 2 extended trips a year, one to Spain and then someplace else.
And Dorothy also is retired.
Well, Dorothy works one day a week.
That's a good time to work.
And
when I'm here, I work. When I'm not here, I don't, although that may change.
So she too has a what I think is a nice way to retire, where she can still work part time.
Yeah, I sometimes work 2 days a week.
You know, it keeps you in touch with the old, with your colleagues, and it keeps you mentally active.
It's an issue of structure.
Yeah, I think
Harry
it's
works for it.
Well, he should. I think it's good.
But he doesn't. He's very happy not working at all. Well, you know the problem with well, I'll tell you later.
Well, I don't think it's a question of being happy with a job or not. I think it structures your life. Work structures life. Work is essential, I think, to healthy living. People who don't work at all lead, I think, a very unhealthy life.
But I know a lot of retired people who are, I think, happy with the retirement.
Well,
and it depends on what your activities are, you know.
It depends on what they do.
And there's a lot, you know, like this organization I belong to, AOL, they take classes, a lot of them.
Well,
some
sure,
of them
it structures
it depends
life
on the person.
In a different way, of course. But see, that's not the same as being idle. When I talk about retirement, I talk about doing things, not staying idle. And it's the idleness that people need structure in their lives.
Well, do you have any other significant issues in your life that you would like to include in this interview that we have not gotten to?
Oh, not really. I can't think of anything at the moment. One thing I would like to do is get your notes, and maybe I flush them out and leave something for my children, because they know very little about me.
I'll give you a copy.
It's interesting, you know, kids don't know a lot about their parents. At least
that's another thing.
My kids know something about me, but they don't know enough about me.
Yeah, I wish I knew more about my grandparents and my parents. My father never talked much, and they died when
I was
young.
Is this tape still running?
Yeah, let's turn it off. All right, I'm going to turn it off. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.